Wretched Radio begins in 3, 2, 1.
Seriously, if you want to relieve stress, go to the Word of God.
Oh my goodness. It's just so weird, isn't it? Do people say stuff like that?
I apologize for him.
Are you kidding me?
Let's all do baptism, and I have a little pool here, and we'll all feel nice and relaxed. That's baptism. No, baptism is a sacred Christian rite. All the various yogas are sacred Hindu rites.
Wake up, America!
It's time for Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Hey, the Bible isn't a psychiatry book. I kind of beg to differ. This is Wretched Radio, the Bible, that antiquated book that progressives would say just doesn't speak to the issues of our day. Furthermore, it's filled with all kinds of fantastic stories, and it contradicts itself, and it's like the telephone game. It's just an old book that doesn't have a place in today's conversation about our emotional issues. I would like to suggest the Bible proves itself to be more than sufficient for helping us understand ourselves and our emotional problems. Case in point, right here in my never-before-nicotine-stained figures, an article from Derek Brown, citing the 8 marks of a sluggard. Now, there are several reasons this article is important. Number one, it has the number 8. And we love lists, so that's a really good reason. The article itself could be lousy, but if it's a list, it qualifies for fodder here on Wretched Radio. Second, there's a whole lot of people that are exactly this, sluggards. Furthermore, this article is important because it reveals that the Bible diagnoses the problem. Don't forget, whenever it comes to an emotional issue, most likely, if not every time, really close to, there's something going on. This isn't Freudian. We're not going to go interpret your dreams and figure out how you were treated by your mother. But we do want to dig deeper than what presents itself on the surface. So let's just say somebody comes into the office, you're counseling them, and they say, "My life is a hash." Is that the problem? No. That's the fruit of the problem. Let's get down to why. And you then would ask a lot of questions to discover, oh, I see why life is a complete dog's breakfast for this fellow or fellowette. It's because they are a sluggard. That's the term the Bible uses for somebody who's lazy. And the fruit of their laziness, their slothfulness, is a life that just, it ain't happening. And then the biblical counselor can go read, what does the Bible say about the sluggard, to work through it step by step until you get to the number 8 to help the person see, here's what's really going on. It offers both a diagnosis and a prognosis. It tells you this is the issue. This is what you're going to experience from being a sluggard. And this is then how you address it now that you recognize what it is. So let us take a look at the brilliance of the Bible again in describing the 8 marks of a sluggard, numero uno. That's also the number 1. The sluggard will not start things. They've got an initiative problem. They rely on others to tell them what to do, Proverbs 6:9. Verbal output outstrips his actual production, Proverbs 14:23. He talks of great plans, but he just can't seem to put them in action. That's the sluggard. They don't get anywhere because they never get off the dime. They never hit go. They never cross the starting line. They don't respond to the gun. We get the point already. They just sit, but they talk a big game. If you know somebody like that, you can point them to the way of the sluggard and you can start to show them, you keep this up, this is where you're headed, guaranteed. Because the Bible accurately describes what happens to the life of a sluggard. The sluggard, number 2, will not finish things. They don't start them. And if they do, they don't get them done. This is someone who has a growing stack of half-read books on his desk. Ouch, ow, ow. Oh, sometimes, though, books, The first half tends to be the better half, frankly. I've read lots of books that started out great and then just limp to the finish line. Nevertheless, this one never finishes a book. A host of home projects awaiting completion. Multiple promises to friends and family left unfulfilled. A collection of almost written articles in the queue. And a gym membership hasn't been used since 2018. That is the way of the sluggard. What do we do with this information? We ask questions. Tell me about your book pile. Tell me about the projects that you've been meaning to get to at home. Well, I haven't done this, I haven't done that, I haven't done the other thing. My wife's getting kind of annoyed with me. Okay, it looks like you're a sluggard. And while that is a hard word, remember, whenever we let the Bible interpret our hearts and our motivations and what is really going on without using psychological gobbledygook, it then provides hope and help for us. Why should somebody not be a sluggard? We'll get to that in just a moment. A number three sign of the eight marks of a sluggard. The sluggard will not face hard things. If confronted with a hard decision or a hard conversation, the sluggard thrown into indecision, wavering between multiple options, and will tend to turn to entertainment to take one's mind off of the work that is set before him or her. They just flee to a happy place. They just console themselves that they're filling their days because they're watching a lot of Netflix. They just can't do the hard work that sometimes human relationships demand, don't they? That's the life of the sluggard. If any of these, by the way, are tagging you, it doesn't mean perhaps that you're a full-blown sluggard, but these are areas of our life. Don't we all need to get better at these? Number four, the sluggard is anxious and restless. Living contrary to the way he's made, you are going to be miserable. You are not made to be slothful. You are not made to put your hands on your chest, twiddle your thumbs, fall asleep, and then drool on your chest. You are made for work. Why should you do those things? We'll get to that in a moment. Remember, if we aren't operating the way that God wants us to operate, because that's the way that he made us, everything is out of whack. Everything. It won't work, at least not to its maximum capacity. I have a pair of really filthy glasses in my hand. Now, I could use these perhaps as a screwdriver to try to adjust my microphone. It might work, but not efficiently, not well. Furthermore, I'm neglecting their actual job description. They're supposed to be on my face, helping me read the Eight Marks of a Sluggard article better. That's what they're made for. In other words, what I'm trying to say is my glasses are happiest when they're on my face. I know it's an inanimate object. It doesn't have emotions, but the illustration points toward us. You're made to work hard. And when you're not, you can't be happy. You can't, because that's not the way that God made you. Please note, this might be a word of caution for all of us. Not everybody needs to work at the same clip. Not everybody needs to be at a particular speed all the time. In fact, nobody should be at a particular speed all the time because it indicates you aren't aware of seasons that require more or less. And we don't want to make sure that we don't take our standard for hard work and apply it to everybody else. Their capacity might simply be less or more. And we can't be looking at one another going, oh, lazy bum. Can't use that standard, but we can encourage all of us to pick it up. I remember vividly, and I even remember the preacher, whom I like. He said something about Paul working really, really hard. And he said, see, you got to be careful that you don't work yourself into the grave. Because you can work so hard, you become burned out. But if you don't work hard enough, then you rust out. I don't want either. I want kind of the middle. Well, I would suggest the more balanced approach, quite honestly, is that, yeah, we're always working hard, but there's going to be some days that just demands more out of us. And you go to bed, drop dead tired. There are other days when you have a chance to not do so much. You should take opportunity to do nothing that day because we need rest. Resting is not a sin. It's a reminder that we're not God. It's good for us to remember rest. Now, you're one of those people who struggles to fall asleep. This maybe sounds foreign to you. I only have four words to say to you. Melatonin. You, therefore, can sleep and rest because it's chemically induced, but you should. And you shouldn't be made to feel guilty if you are regularly working hard, some days harder than others, and other days resting more than others. But that is not the issue of the sluggard who does not face hard things, who is anxious and restless because they're not operating at the capacity that God has custom made them. There are four more signs of the sluggard. Are you starting to see how the Bible really tags us? No, it's not a psychiatry book because we don't need or utilize man's ideas. This is God's description of the human being who just isn't very productive. We will study four more signs. Are we having fun yet? And offer the solution to motivate all of us to get her done. This is Wretched Radio. Brilliant. I have been telling you the Masters Academy International is brilliant, thoughtful, biblically conceived, equipping ministry, training indigenous pastors to rightly divide the word of truth and shepherd local congregations 17 countries around the world, but they do it in a way that is absolutely brilliant.
There's a danger in theological education done in abstraction from the local church. You produce eggheads that simply don't know how to walk people through life issues. We need to have theological education tightly interwoven with church life.
That is precisely what the Masters Academy International does. It trains pastors in conjunction with the local church. It is brilliant and so effective, and it bears so much fruit. Please consider supporting TMAI at wretched.org/pastor.
Thank you for joining us on Wretched Radio today. 2021 has been the best yet here at Wretched. We rolled out a new curriculum of Wretched Bible Studies. Drive-By Biblical Counseling 3 was released. Wretched Worldview hit the streets. Solving the God Puzzle became available. And Season 2 of Road Trip to Truth was released. Not to mention, information like Wretched Radio to date can be heard on over 800 radio stations worldwide. Wretched TV seen on over 135 Christian TV networks. And none of this would have been possible without our gospel partners. So during this year-end season, I would like to ask you to prayerfully consider becoming an ongoing monthly gospel partner. We have lofty goals for 2022, such as the releasing of a new documentary series called Transformed, which highlights the life-changing power of biblical counseling. But we need your support. So visit wretched.org/donate. There you'll find answers to any question you might have regarding becoming an ongoing monthly Wretched gospel partner. Wretched. Amazing grace. Amazing gospel.
Sadly, it is not only the world that chooses to end the lives of their babies, but it is also young people in the church.
Even in youth group, a friend of mine and I, we made a list of abortion clinics and we would pray for them. And our plan was to go to these clinics and to pray for those people. And then here's just something that it was against my core beliefs, something that I never wanted to do, and I did it.
So many regrets. Oh, if only there were Christian pro-life centers. Wait a second, there are. All over the country, preborn.org, preaching the gospel, giving free ultrasounds, saving babies, saving mommies. Would you please consider supporting Preborn? $28 an ultrasound, perhaps, per month. preborn.org/wretched.
Lexicon. Providence is the word we use to describe God's preserving, upholding, and governing of His creation. God sustains His creation day to day through ordinary means established at the beginning of time. and he intervenes in miraculous ways. In all things, God is working for his glory and for the good of those who love him. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Don't worry, there's a perfectly fine segue in this personal story. This is Wretched Radio. I just got off the FaceTime thingy. Did you know that you can put more than one person on the FaceTime? I just did a conference FaceTime call. Oh, wow. The kids these days with their technology. It was my daughter and son-in-law informing us they got a house. Jimmy, they were actually able to procure a house in this market.
Wow.
It was work. See what I'm doing with the segue?
Ha.
To get back to the sluggard thingy. It was hard work. You had to really hustle to get in there before everybody else saw it and make sure you studied the market and made sure you traveled around to get a good sense of neighborhoods. Take a look at what the economy predictions are. Some say it's going up. Some say the housing market's going to crash. It's hard work. And I bring this up, first of all, because I'm really happy for them. Second of all, my daughter and son-in-law are really good examples of what we're not talking about. Oh, no, they're not good examples of what we're talking about. I need to get my negations put in the right word order, don't I? They are hard workers. I mean, they work hard because they were raised in a home where hard work was, that's just what you do. These days, we have a generation that has not been forced to go to work. We have now 2-3 generations of people who have rarely felt a pinch. There's a reason that people who lived through World War II were rather frugal, because they knew what want is and that it's not available. Now, I realize, courtesy of our current administration, we get to experience supply chain interruptions. I don't get it. I don't get it. But here we are, and we might be facing some sort of shortage in the future, and it would help us to appreciate stuff more. When you have to work for it, when you have to save for it, it is gooder for us. Every parent laments this, don't we? And you are a good mom and dad if you actually make your kid work when they don't have to. Why? Because we were made to work. God is a working God. It is not a 9-to-5 position. He's a 24/7 deity who is upholding the universe by the word of his power. He is orchestrating all events, ordaining every single thing that happens in the universe for his glory and for our good. He works hard. And when we are called an image bearer of God, this is one of those areas that we should be instilling into our kids and into ourselves. I have a confession to make, Jimmy. I think we talked about this maybe last week, but Christian ministries and Christian churches, it can be a harbor for lazy people. I can't tell you how often calling up a Christian ministry, you don't get a phone call back. Now, I understand it could be because it is I who is calling. I totally get that. But every time, everybody, all the time, or you send an email, or you just place an order, and it just gets lost in the shuffle, and then it's just, oh, we're just a little behind here. Okay. I'm glad that's working for you. Where I come from, you get her done, and we're supposed to. Now, I have to confess to you, this is a pretty easy diatribe for me to deliver because I like to work. I like it. So this doesn't tend to be an issue for me. Believe me, I've got issues. But it might be an issue for you. So let me share with you the 8 marks, the 8 signs of a sluggard from Derek J. Brown, so that we can identify it in ourselves, recognize the Bible is sufficient for all of life and godliness to help us with our deficiencies and to give us the correct motivation. The sluggard, number 1 sign, is he doesn't start things. Number 2, doesn't finish things. Number 3, the sluggard will not face hard things. 4, the sluggard is anxious and restless because they're never fulfilling their job description while they're on this earth. And they don't feel fulfilled. And that is the right feeling because you are not fulfilling your mandate. Number 5. The sluggard has constant trouble. Financial trouble, Proverbs 12, 11, 19, 15, 24, 21, 5, 24, 33 through 34. Or live in perpetual messiness at home. Oh, is that why Jordan Peterson is right when he tells us to make our bed? Or was that an admiral? Somebody wrote a book of some guy in the military. Here's how you can succeed in life. Number one, make your bed.
Yeah. Yeah, I've read that.
And well, there's something to be there's actually something to be said for that. There's a couple of reasons. Number one is it shows that you've got your day under control. You wake up, you don't just flop out of bed. I got some place to go. I want this to look organized because God is organized and I'm willing to do the work, even if it's a bit of a hassle, because I'm here to work today. I'm here to serve the Lord today. Oops, that might have been a spoiler alert right there. The sluggard may have financial trouble, perpetual messiness, may not be able to keep a job for any length of time because he can't discipline his or her time, shun distraction, and work hard. Simple responsibilities like paying bills and maintaining vehicles will be neglected and cause unnecessary friction. That's from the Bible, by the way. No, it doesn't talk about your automobile, but it does describe the sluggard in this manner, and it's right, isn't it? The sluggard, number six, is a nuisance to others. You could put me in a room with a vat of crack, and I could not write one proverb that is even remotely as brilliant as any of the proverbs that were written. Phil Johnson couldn't write something like this, and he's a good writer. He could not concoct a proverb this brilliant. By the way, speaking of Solomon, Nehemiah 13, just heard this sermon on Sunday. Nehemiah 13 talks about worldliness, which, by the way, the world view about work isn't. It's not biblical. It's work less, live more. Don't work hard. Lollygag, experience the world, all of the bennies without all of the calories burned into going into what it takes to enjoy oneself. And in Nehemiah 13, when Nehemiah isn't very happy, because he comes, this is after 15 years, they made a commitment 15 years earlier in Nehemiah 12, there's a between 12 and 13, there's about a 15-year span, and they had committed, we're not going to marry any foreign women. We are not going to give our daughters to foreign men. It had nothing to do with racial issues. It had everything to do with religious issues, that you will go astray and you will worship their gods. Nehemiah, 15 years later, they're at it again, giving their wives to or giving their daughters to foreign men, taking on foreign wives. And he used Solomon as the example of a guy who did the very same thing. And look what it caused him. And the emphasis on Nehemiah is, take heed, Solomon fell. You think you're going to do better? Be godly, not worldly. You let down your guard and you are going to get knocked out fast. It happened to Solomon. It'll happen to you. Don't be worldly. And if I could use that as a segue, don't be lazy. That's the worldly way. Be a hard worker. Like vinegar to the teeth and smoke to the eyes, so is the sluggard to those who send him. Just annoying. Number seven, the sluggard is self-deceived, and it may manifest itself in grand proposals, big ideas, a new invention, but they'll resist outside critique, and they might have little basis in reality. Slow, consistent accumulation of wealth through steady work habits is unattractive to the sluggard. So unrealistic dreams of quick money may dominate his mind. Isn't that true? Have you met that guy before? Probably buys lottery tickets too. Number eight sign of the sluggard won't become a leader. Because of laziness, the sluggard will not wield much influence. Certainly won't become a leader, for leadership requires diligence, sacrifice, long hours, pain, and perseverance. Now, you can be doing those things without becoming a leader, but this does indeed start to get us down the trail of why we should be motivated to work hard. If you don't, you're not going to accomplish all the good things you could get done for the Lord. You just don't know what you could be doing to build God's kingdom and participating in that eternal work. In other words, you're missing the boat, but I think there's a bigger motivator. Consider, Jesus. He is the demonstration of a hard worker. Gets up early to pray, spends his day, read the Gospel of Mark, immediately. Man, he was working hard. Why? Because he was accomplishing God's purposes so that sinners could be reconciled to the Father. He worked hard. Stare at Jesus, who did that, yes, for the glory of God, but also for your benefit. And that should be what gets you out of bed in the morning. My Savior worked hard for me. I am on it. Give me the assignments, Lord. I'm going to tackle them, and I'm going to work hard because I don't want to be a sluggard. This is Wretched Radio.
This is Wretched Radio, and I'm Jimmy Hicks. Well, you know, it's a big decision when you hire a financial planner, right? You want somebody that's competent and has the understanding and qualifications that would make you feel comfortable enough to take their financial advice. That's just common sense, right? Well, not at one financial firm. Actually, it's one of the world's largest investment firms. State Street is the name of it, and it's being reported that leaders at State Street must now ask for permission to hire white men, as the company rolls out a new diversity hiring initiative. So the scorecards now place less emphasis on skills and merit and more of an emphasis on race and gender. Aren't those the things people spent years fighting against? I guess it's not real discrimination if you're discriminating against a white male. Well, here's some good news. A forthcoming university has just been announced by Barry Weiss. The University of Austin will be the name, and it will be a non-woke university open to free thought. Imagine that, free thought on a college campus. Yeah, you probably can't imagine that because I don't think it's ever been allowed. The announcement acknowledged that the corruption of higher education is beyond repair. And another telling sign, professors all over the country are clamoring to be part of this new university and leave the woke universe that they have been a part of. I'm pretty sure the majority of people in this country are sick of the woke ideology. And some people are starting to actually fight back and do something about it. Well, now members of the LGBT community have come out claiming that the Texas abortion ban will have a traumatic outcome for trans and non-binary individuals. Despite not explicitly referring to anyone but women, the text of the Texas abortion ban prohibits abortion beyond the six-week mark. Reproductive rights experts and LGBT advocates are worried that this will impact trans and non-binary people as well, specifically subjecting them to so-called body dysphoria and other health-related issues if the law forces them to carry out a pregnancy. So how can someone, not a woman, get pregnant? Yeah, it's because they are actually women pretending to be men, playing dress up, and they can still get pregnant like a woman. This gender thing gets stranger and stranger, not necessarily by the day, but by the story that we're talking about, because the rules seem to change depending on what the story is. I think I just figured out the real meaning behind the term gender fluid. More Wretched Radio is straight ahead. I'm Jimmy Hicks.
Revelation. General revelation is God's act of making himself known through his creation. A part of general revelation is the sensus divinatus, a sense of the divine. God has given every person an undeniable awareness of his existence. There are no true atheists, only rebels in denial of what every person knows to be true. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Leave it to Jimmy. This is Wretched Radio. Sounds like a sitcom from the 50s. Leave it to Jimmy. where we go into the home of Jimmy Hicks to see what he does with the kids and how he greets his wife when he comes home, because
No.
She's always wearing an apron and making cookies.
That's exactly right.
Is that my critical? Leave it to Jimmy. After we finished our little conversation about not being a sluggard, Jimmy, you said what?
Not to justify being lazy or anything like that. I just, can you not take it too far? The hard work aspect, which I totally agree with, can one not take it too far and get obsessed with making money so much that they spend so much time away from their family?
Yep. And it's easy to do, especially for guys. This falls into the same category as so many issues. We have time and we have talents, and our talents can be our labors or our money. How does God want us to spend our time? How many hours a day should be dedicated to Him? Well, the truth is all of them. But how much time should we be committing to learning more about Him, growing in Christ's likeness? Question, how much money should we be giving to Him? What percentage of your paycheck should go to the Lord? Third, how hard should you be working? And the answer to those three questions is the same. Whatever you want, because it's a heart issue. And so we need to be motivated by a desire to give our money because we want the Lord to have His kingdom grow, and we want to participate in that work, and He commands us. And cheerful givers are blessed people. I don't always mean financially, but it's more blessed to give than to receive. It's a joy to participate in the work of the Lord. And by the way, if you're in a church, and right now it's kind of, yay, it's not what it used to be, and it seems to be slip-sliding away, and I don't know that I should give my money. You're not really giving it to the church per se. You're giving it to the Lord. That means even if your money gets used poorly, which is a bummer, don't feel bad. You didn't give it to them. They were simply the instruments that you gave some money to do the Lord's work, because you were giving it unto Him. The same thing is true with how much time we spend studying the Word. Up to us. And everybody's formula can be different based on the season. This is the brilliance of the Bible. It doesn't constrain us and make us all look uniform, because there are seasons for people. And the same thing is true with hard work. We should work as hard as we want to for the Lord. Noting Jimmy's, wise injection that we've got to be careful that we don't fall into another ditch. Because that is a danger, and a lot of guys fall into that. And I'll be honest with you, that's one I can dive into. I like it. I like work. No, the good thing is I really dig my family, so I want to get home to them. That's kind of what helps me pull the plug at the end of the day. But if I'm not mindful of time, oh, wait a second, it's 6:30. Okay, I guess I better get out of here. Especially, you know, when you start the day like I do at 2 in the afternoon. Kidding. This is a ditch that we can fall into that requires the help of others. How do you know if you're working too much? Ask your wife and children. Ask your spouse. We need each other for this. Because I will confess to you, I'm actually in a season right now where I'm trying to fight for a little bit less work. Don't panic. Not a lot, but a little. I just think. Wait, hold on. I I'm just thinking about it too much. I'm doing it too much. Got to watch the balance here, because I do want to remember my walk with the Lord, and I do want to remember my time with my spouse and my desire to be a blessing to my children. That I have to pull it back sometimes, and I think we all do. And the best way to discover if that describes you, you got to ask your loved ones now. What if they say, yeah, Dad, you're always working too hard? All right, I would listen to that, and I would not cast it off, because you're in a season of need, and dads do what dads got to do. There are just sometimes you got to get a second job. Dad, there are sometimes you got to get a third job. You promised I'm going to take care of this person and the offspring that we make together. You got to get on it. And you might be in that season right now, and it is okay. And your family might not be happy. That means then you need to minister to your family, be communicating to your family, telling them, hey, this is the season we're in. You know what? Your dad doesn't want to have a third job. I'm going to pull the plug on it just as soon as we are in safe harbor. So let's be loving one another. I'm going to do my best to make sure that I come home with energy, and I want to spend as much time as I can because I adore you. I love you to pieces, but let's endure this season together. No problemo. Having said that, if it's constant, you've been hearing this for years, sir, heed Jimmy's warning. You're working too much. It's not, we are meant to work, but we are also meant to enjoy. Now, that's the easier one to obey, isn't it? Oh, you mean God wants me to play and enjoy the planet? Yeah, he does. But it's all in balance. So watch your balance. Let your family help you determining if you are being a sluggard or not. You could also do that in the context of your local church. If you are involved to the point where people know you, they can be asking you. This is a good question for guys to ask, isn't it? One another. Hey, dude, how much you work last week? Your family a little annoyed that you're not around very much? And by the way, got to watch out for another time vacuum. Hobbies, sports, watching golf on TV. I'm just using some examples that maybe apply, maybe don't apply. You see, I'm so lazy, I don't even play. I just watch golf. That's how lazy I am, because it's so much work walking around, hitting a little ball. Watch out for those things that can take you away from finding balance. That is all this diatribe has been about. Balance, balance, balance. Based on your love for the Lord. What?
No, I was just thinking as you...
What? I thought we were done.
No, almost, almost. I just wanted to make this one point. Thinking as you're talking...
Oh, I'm sorry. I pushed the sound effect I was trying to get to until sorry. Jimmy knows best.
No, I'm not disagreeing with you. I completely agree with you. But, you know, sometimes when you talk to people who are working
hold
hard...
on. I don't want to be a legalist, but I do it well. You said, I agree with everything, and then came the conjunction, which
what?
Means you don't.
No, I'm just adding to.
I am going to. Oh, I can't wait to blog about you. Yeah, we are
you.
Done.
I've canceled. No, sometimes when you're talking to folks who are working too hard and their answer is to that is, well, I've got to. I need to work. I need the money.
Sure.
The question that always runs through my mind is, well, how much money do you really need?
Well, that's all. This is all heart business.
Yeah.
And here's the reality, too. There can be people who are going to have to work a lot of hours just to survive because of either their limitations, because don't we all have that? Clearly, this is about the only job I'm even moderately equipped to handle. Talking. There's a bazillion things I can't do. Well, for some people, it could be a bazillion and 10. And they are going to be working in a position that has as much dignity as being the president of the United States. Okay, that office is a little besmirched these days, but you get my point. Whatever it is, you clean hotel rooms. That has as much dignity as the person who milks cows. You say, wait a second. That doesn't sound dignified. Yes, it is when it is done for the Lord. You're cleaning a room as unto the Lord. You're milking a cow as unto the Lord. You're running a nation as unto the Lord. That is what brings about eternal benefits for our labors. That is what Solomon was ranting about in his book about wisdom when he said, vanity, vanity, all is vanity. Unless you're doing it for the Lord. Then... You have a point. Otherwise, partying, drinking, immorality, studying, hard work. There was another one that he pursued. Isn't that interesting that Solomon cited? So I really got to work. I gathered a library, but I really worked hard. Vanity, all vanity. Unless you're doing it for the Lord. That's Ecclesiastes 12, verses 13 and 14, Rexella. When you are doing it unto the Lord, your work has dignity. And you might just happen to be one of those people that has to work really hard all the days of your life, which would bring us full circle, perhaps, to the local church, there are some people who have to really bust it every single day. And if you happen to be one who doesn't, circumstances, blessings, I'd call them privileges, but that gun is fully loaded these days. And you don't, and you maybe have some extra, and maybe a brother or sister could spend more time with their family if you were maybe willing to release some of it. That might be a consideration for how we can love one another in the context of the local church. We'll get to this if Jimmy doesn't interrupt again next on Wretched Radio. Despite what all of the headlines say, there is some very good news happening around the globe. Jesus is still fulfilling his promise to build his church. Nothing is going to stop it. And right now in Eastern Europe, he is doing just that through the Tomorrow Clubs, kids clubs all throughout very poor Eastern European countries. And thanks to you, wretched person, more and more clubs are being sponsored, more and more kids are being saved, and more churches are being strengthened. Paul Marty from the Tomorrow Clubs.
Every time we visit a Tomorrow Club and talk to kids and leaders, we are blown away by the gospel's power to change lives. And the Wretched audience has been such a big part of making that possible.
Would you please consider sponsoring your very own Tomorrow Club? $30 a month. 30 Little Disciples, tomorrowclubs.org/wretched.
You know, just a quick perusal of the Wretched store and wretched.org, and you'll notice resources like Road Trip to Truth, Life is Best, Untethered, Wretched Worldview, and all of our resources have one very distinct thing in common. And no, it's not Todd's ugly mug. Okay, maybe two things in common, but what I'm referring to, or who I'm referring to, is you. Seriously. Because if you're a gospel partner, you are actually responsible for the resources we produce. We're just the mouthpiece, but our gospel partners are the engines that make Wretched run. Without you, there is no us. So if you're already a gospel partner, we humbly thank you. And if you're not an ongoing monthly gospel partner, would you please prayerfully consider becoming one and help us continue producing biblically sound, Christ-centered content to reach the lost and edify the saints? Visit wretched.org/donate to get all the details on becoming a Wretched Gospel Partner today. That's wretched.org/donate. It truly does take us all.
Here are three words that can strike terror in the heart of any Christian. Open Enrollment Month. The three words that can make you shudder if you have to renew or find a new health insurance program. Did you know every month is an open enrollment month with MediShare? Affordable biblical health care sharing, a huge savings per family, on average $500 per month. You have access to a massive doctor network and MediShare's free 24/7 telehealth option. It shouldn't be a surprise that MediShare's double the customer satisfaction ratings compared with typical health insurance. So instead of experiencing the terrors this year, how's about getting in touch with MediShare? You can do that by calling 844-34-BIBLE, 844-34-BIBLE, or visit MediShare.com/wretched.
Names of God. We learn a lot about God from the names given to him in Scripture. One name is El Roi, the God who sees. God is ultimately aware and concerned for us. Nothing escapes his vision. For the unsaved, this is a great terror. But for those who are in Christ, this is a great comfort. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Best intentions. This is Wretched Radio. Was going to try to get to this.
The agony of defeat.
Lo and behold, Jimmy jumps in again. This is Wretched Radio. Okay. What?
What?
What? What do you mean, what?
What did I do? That was just for your knowledge.
Well, you know, I've got the attention of a span of a gerbil, so you tell me something, there it is. It's just stuck in my head. It's from near your hometown, Memphis,
yes.
As you rightly stated.
That's right.
Memphis.
Memphis. Memphis.
With an I. M-I-M.
That's it.
Memphis.
The home of the king. Now, there's a,
oh, man.
There's a private Christian school, a big Christian school, Briarcrest Christian School. And I was just reading a story on a local news station that they are going to teach sessions to parents and students. The session is titled "God Made Them Male and Female, and It Was Good."
A
gospel response.
Look out!
Yeah, a gospel response to culture's gender theory, and a local county commissioner is attacking them. She is
at the private school.
That's right.
All right, read the quote that this person tweeted.
Oh, her tweet: there has been a reckoning with these institutions on the oppression they uphold and the gates they keep.
Yep, we've got to have a day of reckoning.
Yeah,
because we're not going to let them oppress children. That's our job. We're going to oppress the children. This is Jimmy, this might be a Mott and Bailey fallacy.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Oppression is bad. We all go, yep. Therefore, you can't teach children what the Bible says about genders and sexuality.
That's a good point.
Because that's just wrong. Well, no, that's not oppression. That is teaching a child what a parent used to have the right to teach. Or to send a child to an institution that teaches that.
And they're paying a lot of money for their children to go to this
institution. Oh, I'm guessing they are.
Yes, they are.
Yeah, private school, mega expensive these days. So I'm sure they're paying, and they have every, oh, that's right, parental rights. Mm. Speaking of parental rights, did you read Juan Williams' article about, I think this was, maybe in the Wall Street Journal, wherever it was produced. And he, in he was giving his political analysis of the recent election where, for instance, Virginia, there is now a Republican governor instead of a Democrat. Well, guess what? It was all racist. One. The rallying cry for people on the far right is parents' rights. It is a campaign to stop classroom discussion of Black Lives Matter protests or slavery because it upsets some children, especially white children who might feel guilt. See that? No, that's not exact. No, anybody's, we'll tell history. That's fine. But when you're telling little children that they need to feel terrible about their skin color because maybe their ancestors behaved wickedly. No, Mott and Bailey, that ain't exactly logical or reasonable. Juan Williams, who usually is, I can enjoy Juan Williams because normally, it's like, okay, it's not like kooky liberal, but this is just the modern day battle cry of the progressives. The parents' right campaign message at first glance looks to have zero to do with race. Because it doesn't have anything to do with race. And if there is a parent who goes to one of these parents' rights events, approaches a school board and expresses their laments, who is motivated because they want their white children to succeed over the black children, I don't know anybody who would go, yeah, that's fine, it's parents' rights. We'd go, no, that's racist. Stop that. That's wrong. You need to read the Bible more. But according to Juan, that's what this was actually all about. Terry McAuliffe, the Democratic candidate, calls the Republican message a racist dog whistle. The now governor-elect Youngkin closing message of book banning and silencing esteemed black authors is a racist dog, whilst designed to gin up support from the most extreme elements of his party, mainly his top endorser and surrogate, Donald Trump. We just need to be aware. That's the associations that are being made. And that is the way that they're trying to staple something to you to bring down anything that's remotely biblical or conservative. Kind of synonymous words. It's racist. It's not about parents' rights. It's racist. This is the Gnosticism of CRT. You don't realize, you just think, parent, that you want your kids to not be taught sex ed, about critical race theory, but we know it's because you're racist. President Biden recently said the violence at the U.S. Capitol on January 6th was also about white supremacy. That's Juan Williams then, because Joe Biden said that. His call to authority, the president, therefore, see, everybody who's white is racist. This is how Juan defines critical race theory. Broadly, a focus on racial disparities as a fact of American life. Come on, Juan, you know better than that. You've certainly read its roots, that it comes from Marxist ideology. You've certainly read how postmodernism has gotten into a tangle. You must know that critical race theory is a new idea that has way more baggage than just a focus on racial disparities as a fact of American life. It goes way beyond that. That the entire American system was built on the concept that white people are better than black people, Native Americans, anybody with a different skin color. Therefore, everything we're going to do, including the Constitution, the Declaration of Independence, even though it talks about all being created equal, it's all racist. It's all racist. And that's Juan Williams now, apparently, too. Republicans nationwide have made it a boogeyman to excite racial divisions and get their base to the polls. We would actually say that critical race theory in this type of writing is a boogeyman. This movement is not about parents. It is about exciting the far right base by stirring up racial division. Let me try to think of something analogous. Critical race theory is all about division. That is baked into the CRT cake. It is a real, it's like flour to a cake. It's like the main ingredient. You've got other things like Marxism. That might be a couple of eggs. You might have some sugar added in, which would be economic disparity and that people don't have blessings. They just have privileges. You can add in. But the biggie is that it causes division. And what's Juan saying? Nope. You're the ones who are causing division. That's absolutely shocking. I wonder what he thinks about the school wishing to teach the kids about two genders being made in the image of God.
It's probably racist.
Probably racist. As long as Jimmy has hijacked the program. Another school story. Well, I got one for you, Jimmy. Mine's got an international flair.
Oh, it's
Scotland.
There.
Edinburgh, specifically. Teachers and pupils at a primary school, that's grade school, in Edinburgh, took part in the initiative for the first time on November 4th. What was the initiative? It was an event called Wear a Skirt to School Day. The idea is that you come to school, because there was apparently somebody, a little boy who thought he was a girl, wanted to wear a skirt to school. It was a problem because there were some adults who had a modicum of common sense left. And so now the kids are showing solidarity with their fellow student and everybody, including the boys and the male teachers, wearing a skirt to school. Now, typically, I wouldn't have a problem with this in Scotland because they wear kilts. This isn't that. This is floor length. And you're supposed to look, a boy's supposed to look like a girl. And the idea came from the children. And some parents, not all, there were people who complained. Parents praised the school for promoting child-driven learning and encouraging their individual passions and desires. So the kids came up with this idea, and the adults said, absolutely, because it shows that you're thinking, and we don't want to put a wet blanket on those passions. So proud. The primary school said it is so proud. The City of Edinburgh Council also praised the move and said it is fully committed to promoting equality and diversity, especially in schools. So this maybe is some comfort to those of us in the States. It appears that in Scotland there are some people who have also lost their minds. This appears to be an actual global pandemic. Since the announcement, many parents have taken to social media to criticize the campaign, which calls for the headmaster to be sacked. Parents at the school say they are, quote, disgusted by the reaction and that there is no need to tear down what children want to do. Wow. So in other words, you come in and go, I don't think the boys should be wearing skirts to school. You're disgusting. I think that's Mott and Bailey. I'm pretty certain that is the classic fallacy. Don't you want kids to thrive? Therefore, the boys need to wear skirts. No, that, hold it. That's not exactly this, but they run from their progressive ideology when you tag them on it back into the Mott for safety. Oh, it is Mott and Bailey land everywhere. Until tomorrow, go serve your king.